Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's August 25th, 2025. Great to be with you on a Monday and every day here at Catholic Connection on EWTN, as you just heard. It is a Monday, and it is the last full week of August. My goodness, here we go, moving into the Labor Day weekend, which is considered the unofficial wrap-up of summer, even though summer ends later on the calendar in September. But a lot of people will take a break this weekend, and I hope you can take a break too, but not from us, and certainly not from the Lord. You never take a vacation from God. We have to remember that, right? Stay with us this morning because we have a fantastic program for you. At 15 minutes past the hour, our friend and fellow Catholic radio host, the one, the only Matt Swaim, will be joining us as he always does for Journey Home Highlights on Monday, because he is a producer of The Journey Home, which airs on Monday evenings on EWTN. And of course, Matt is also with the Coming Home Network and, of course, the Sunrise Morning Show. So we always talk about the guests and anything else that pops up, maybe the news that pertains to faith and conversion and evangelization and all that amazing stuff. So that's coming up at about 15 minutes past the hour with our friend Matt Swaim. And then this story is just one, I just can't wrap my head around this. Why won't they leave these poor sisters of the poor alone? Lori Windham is a VP and senior counsel at Beckett. That's a wonderful law firm that works with people who are being discriminated on religious liberty cases. And they have been representing the Little Sisters of the Poor for years. And believe it or not, the battle is not over. But these sisters are so strong, and they refuse to give up or give in. And we'll get the latest from Lori. And then we will wrap up with a beautiful scripture verse from our very own Gail Buckley from Catholic Scripture Study International. We give this to you on Monday so you can make a note of it yourself and just think about the words as we go through the week. This verse this week, Ecclesiastes 11:4, he who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. I can't wait to hear Gail's perspective on this. When I was looking at this verse, I was thinking, okay, that means we have to keep our eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, and not worry about the clouds passing by. Not that we don't enjoy them and notice their beauty, but this is talking about basically getting your heads out of the clouds and putting your faith into action. We'll talk about that with Gail Buckley. Again, the verse for this week, which we shall discuss toward the end of the program, this hour, first hour of the program, Ecclesiastes 11:4. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. Looking forward to heading down to the Catholic Radio Conference from the Detroit area to D.C., and that will happen tomorrow after the program. And we have an exciting week planned, and you'll be able to hear live coverage of it throughout the week, especially Thursday. All of us are going to be doing our shows live from our hotel just outside of D.C. in the suburbs of Virginia. On Wednesday, we have a special retreat that's been organized for us that will be at the beautiful Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, of course, in D.C., so we'll be there. And there's going to be a nice reception sponsored by our friends at Guadalupe, Toya Hall, Guadalupe Radio, and our friends at Catholic Answers, greeting folks tomorrow night when we get there. It's a great time to be together, and even though we talk to people all the time, like, for example, Matt Swaim is on my show every week, I'm on his show every week, and Annie and I communicate every day because we're going back and forth on the news links, and we communicate with our team throughout the EWTN network on a regular basis, but we all work in different places. So it's really great to be able to come together and physically be together and have real FaceTime. So I'm really looking forward to catching up with everybody except Dr. Ray Guarendi. But hey, we all have our crosses to bear in life. I'm kidding. We're actually our really good friends. But no, he's actually going to be on the show with me. I hope. I haven't asked him yet. I just plan on pulling him away from wherever he is and putting him down in the chair and talking to him about the importance of Catholic radio. So it's going to be fun. I hope you can stay tuned all week long, every day, every week. Here we are, EWTN. All right, let's take a look at the weather for you this morning on a Monday. National Weather Service is saying there's excessive rainfall that is a threat across portions of the Southwest. And that will take place through tomorrow. And then we also have flash flooding that's a concern across portions of Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. And that is through Wednesday. And then the Pacific Northwest will remain hot today and tomorrow. And then there's some cooler conditions that are moving through the east after a lot of warm weather. It is a Monday. It's August 25th. We appreciate your listenership. Let's get started with the news here on a Monday right on EWTN. Yesterday, during his Angelus address, Holy Father Pope Leo XIV, reflecting on the image of the narrow door mentioned in the Gospel by the Lord, which Jesus used as a way to respond to someone who asks if only a few people will be saved. The Pope pointing out that this image might raise a question. If God is a father of love and mercy, always waiting with open arms to welcome us, why does Jesus say the door to salvation is narrow? The Pope argues that God is not trying to discourage us. Rather, he says he's challenging those who are overconfident and think they are already saved, those who practice religion and therefore believe they are in good standing. These people, the Pope continued, do not truly understand that a person's heart cannot be transformed solely by religious acts. God is not looking for people who live a life separate from worship. He does not want people to make sacrifices or offer prayers if they do not lead us to loving our brothers and sisters and to practicing justice. It says a faith only becomes authentic when it becomes part of our entire lives, when it becomes a foundation of our choices, when it leads us to be men and women committed to doing good and willing to take risks in love, just as Jesus did. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky, meanwhile, marking his country's Independence Day yesterday by posting a letter from Pope Leo in which the Pope assured him of prayers for Ukrainians suffering in the war and urging that the clamor of arms may fall silent and give way to dialogue. He said, with a heart wounded by the violence that ravages your land, I address you on this day of your national feast, which Zelensky shared on the social media platform X yesterday, the Vatican's official media outlet. Vatican News published an article attributing the message to the Pope. Leo said he was entrusting Ukraine to the Blessed Virgin Mary, Queen of Peace, and prayed the path to peace for the good of all would be opened. Ukraine's Independence Day, celebrated on August 24th, commemorating the country's 1991 Declaration of Independence from the Soviet Union. And the Pope's message, of course, coming 2 days after he called for a worldwide day of fasting and prayer for peace, coinciding with the August 22nd feast of the Queenship of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Russia's foreign minister, meanwhile, says there is no meeting plan between President Putin and Ukrainian President Zelensky. In an interview with NBC's Meet the Press, Sergei Lavrov said, while Russia is prepared to meet, a major obstacle still remains.
Putin is ready to meet with Zelensky. When the agenda would be ready for a summit? And this agenda is not ready at all.
President Trump recently meeting with Zelensky and European leaders at the White House. The president has been pushing for a peace deal to end the 3.5-year-old war, which began when Russia launched a massive invasion of its neighbor. At the conclusion of the recitation of the Angelus yesterday, the Holy Father expressing his concern for the people of Cabo Delgado in Mozambique, who have endured years of insecurity caused by extremist violence. As Nathan Morley reports from Vatican News, more than 50,000 people have been displaced in Mozambique's northern area in recent weeks following a new wave of terrorist attacks.
This is the largest displacement since February and deepening an already dire humanitarian situation. According to the medical charity Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, entire families, including children, pregnant women, and the elderly, have fled their homes and have trekked for days to try and reach makeshift camps. Many people fear for their lives if they remain in their homes, yet they face enormous challenges in accessing basic needs such as food, shelter and healthcare if they decide to flee. Cabo Delgado, once known for its natural gas reserves and its ruby mines, has become the epicenter of a brutal insurgency and a humanitarian crisis at the same time. Since 2017, this area has been under siege by Islamist extremists who are linked to the so-called Islamic State. More than 5,000 people have been killed and over 1 million displaced in the region, where militants linked to Al-Shabaab continue to target civilians.
In Washington, D.C., Rory O'Neill tells us National Guard troops deployed in Washington are now authorized to carry firearms while the president considers expanding his crackdown on crime.
National Guard troops deployed to the nation's capital are now authorized to carry weapons while on patrol as part of President Trump's crackdown on crime. On social media this weekend, President Trump said that Maryland Governor Wes Moore's record on crime is, quote, a very bad one, and he may have to send troops there, too. The president has also suggested sending troops to Chicago to combat crime, but it's unclear if he has that authority outside of Washington, D.C. I'm Rory O'Neill.
Vice President J.D. Vance defending the new congressional map recently approved by the Texas Senate, appearing on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday. Vance claiming that Democratic gerrymandering has made the redistricting efforts absolutely necessary.
All we're doing, frankly, is trying to make the situation a little bit more fair on a national scale. The Democrats have gerrymandered their states really aggressively. We think there are opportunities to push back against that, and that's really all we're doing.
The Texas Tribune says a map was adopted early Saturday in a party-line vote over fierce Democratic opposition. The president had called for the new map to increase the House majority ahead of the midterm elections. Scott Carr tells us President Trump's border czar is determined in his efforts to still address the immigration issue. This after a judge ordered the closure of Florida's so-called alligator Alcatraz.
The federal court ordered the Immigrant Detention Center at the Florida Everglades to close within 60 days. Border czar Tom Holman tells News Nation, though, the order is not going to stop the operations of Immigration and Customs Enforcement and that federal authorities will continue making arrests. The judge in the case said state and federal authorities broke several environmental laws as they raced to build the detention center. State officials in Florida have appealed the injunction. I'm Scott Carr.
Unconfirmed reports of an active shooter at the University of South Carolina and a false report at Villanova led to lockdowns and evacuations. Yesterday, USC ordered students and staff on its Columbia campus to shelter in place, saying an active shooter had been reported on campus. An alert went out at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, warning people to avoid the area and evacuate or barricade if necessary. Officials later said there was no evidence of a shooter. At Villanova in Pennsylvania, a hoax report temporarily disrupted things on campus. It was the second fake shooter report at that school in at least a week. Tammy Trujillo tells us the Menendez brothers, both Lyle and Eric, will remain behind bars, this after being denied parole.
A San Diego parole board turned down Lyle Menendez's request for parole on Friday night, a day after his brother Eric was also denied. 3 months ago, Eric and Lyle were resentenced to 50 years to life for the 1989 shotgun murders of their parents. The brothers have maintained the killings were in self-defense, claiming they were sexually abused by their father. They'll be eligible to try for parole once again in 3 years. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
Boeing will continue negotiations with its striking machinist union today. International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers President Tom Boling said he's hoping the two sides can work something out so everyone can move on. Over 3,000 St. Louis area Boeing employees went on strike earlier this month after failed negotiations over a new contract. And there's a new survey from a retirement services provider showing, as Rob Martier tells us, Americans are not all that realistic, apparently, when it comes to financial milestones.
Empower asked nearly 1,000 Americans to set target ages for 6 life milestones: retirement saving, landing a dream job, earning 6 figures, buying a home, becoming debt-free, and retiring. Most people said the age to start saving for retirement is 27, and landing your dream job should happen at 29. Respondents said you should earn 6 figures by 35, buy your first home at 30, become debt-free at 41, and retire at 58. I'm Rob Martier.
And finally, in our news segment on a busy Monday morning, 13 minutes past the hour, Cracker Barrel hoping to see stock prices rebound after the hit it took when the popular restaurant chain unveiled that new logo. The revamped logo offering a simple design that removes the old man and carefully sketched barrel. But fans of the restaurant quickly rebuked the change. Cracker Barrel's new design resulted in, get this, a nearly $100 million loss at one point last week. We'll be right back and we check in with our friend Matt Swaim, of course, from the Sunrise Morning Show, and also with Journey Home Highlights on a Monday morning. Stay tuned. Catholic Connection. It is a Monday morning, 16 minutes past the hour, August 25th. And on Mondays, we catch up with our friend Matt Swaim from the Sunrise Morning Show. And he always gives its highlights from the very popular program here on EWTN on Monday nights, The Journey Home. Hey, my friend. Long time no talk to. Like
hey,
an hour,
Teresa,
I think.
Or
2 hours. Yeah. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been good. So long. It's been so long. And I get to see you later this week.
I'm so excited. I get to give you and Annie a hug. I've always given you like hugs, air hugs, but now I can give you a hug.
You're going to have to give Annie a bigger hug than usual because she's, with child. So
I know. I'm so excited for her. Yes, indeed. Beautiful. All right. What's coming up tonight, my friend?
Okay. So we got Father Michael Nixon, a priest of the Diocese of Pensacola, Tallahassee. And he came into the church when he was like maybe 5. So after a life of sin and, you know, just carousing and that sort of thing. Actually, his parents were Hare Krishnas.
No way.
So,
wow.
He grew up, you know, with those first few years of his life experiencing the Hare Krishna world. But his parents, being strong spiritual seekers, brought their family home to the Catholic Church. So his whole experience of growing up was kind of understanding what it's like to be Catholic in contrast with all the things that his parents had been, you know, either mm-hmm. not just in the first 5 years of his life, but, you know, in their really formative spiritual years. So he learned kind of everything about what it meant to be a Catholic through the lens of his parents' conversion.
Wow. And this kind of lends itself, we were talking during the break about the impact of someone's conversion, not just on themselves, obviously, and their parish and their, you know, nearby community, but the impact it can have for generations, right?
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that is so important to help people understand, because sometimes when people will ask us at the Coming Home Network, like, how many people you bring in the church this year? Well, first of all, that's kind of a meaningless question, because they usually, something happened to them before we ran into them, mm-hmm. right? And we're not the ones who are going to confirm them either. That's going to happen at their parish. One of the things that is more important for us to measure in terms of the metric is, like, are you learning how to be Catholic in your family, and how's that going to have an impact over time? And all you got to do is look around the landscape of Catholic radio and the EWTN world to see how mm-hmm. that plays out. So Marcus Grodi came into the church. He was a Protestant pastor who became Catholic and hosted a good television show for a number of years. But guess what? He raised his family Catholic, and now his son runs the Coming Home Network, and his other son is a priest in the Diocese of Toledo, mm-hmm. right? Who is baptizing and confirming left and right. Scott Hahn, everybody talks about his work, but Scott Hahn's son's a priest, right? Doing the mm-hmm. same thing. You and I were talking, you know, on the morning show this morning about how we've got to follow Dr. Matthew Bunsen, you know, on the stage at the EWTN radio conference. His mm-hmm. parents are both converts.
Mm-hmm.
And their conversion gave us mm-hmm. Dr. Matthew Bunsen. So that generational impact is so important, because your conversion is never just about you.
Right. Well, think about Steve Ray when he and Jana came into the church, and he, Steve has four children, and then all, I don't know how many grandchildren now, and great grandchildren.
He doesn't either. So,
and well, he and Al, the late Al Cresta, bless his heart, they used to have a contest to see who was getting the most grandchildren. I think Steve bypassed Al though, in terms of the number of grandkids, but both of them had such an influence on their family, because Al is a revert. Al was raised Catholic, but fell away and became a Protestant pastor, as you know, and look at the impact he had and has still. And then you have Steve Ray, whose kids are just amazing, incredible, and they're so dedicated to the faith. They do so much work, and some of them work with Steve in his ministry. But yeah, it is generations, right?
Absolutely. So one of my favorite examples of this is the guy who's the director of pastoral care at the Coming Home Network. His name is Ken Hensley. He was a Baptist pastor, and he became Catholic, and he was so stressed out. What am I going to do with my life? You know, mm-hmm. how am I going to figure out how I fit in the church? How is this going to affect, you know, me and my career aspirations? Well, in the meantime, he's got two teenage kids, and his daughter has this big conversion after wrestling for a little while as well. I don't know if you know this, but out in the Baptist and Protestant world, like, two kids is kind of max, right? That's mm-hmm. That's all you get. And anything past that is kind of like, oh man, those guys are kind of weird with all their three kids and four kids. But Ken's daughter has this conversion and decides to live exactly like the church asks people to live. He now has, I think, 12 grandkids.
Wow.
Through that daughter. So there's 12 people, 10 of whom probably wouldn't exist if he and his family had just kind of stayed Baptist.
Yeah, it is. You made a lot of excellent points. But where you said it's never just about us, and it's never like me and Jesus, right? We always hear that, well, you know, my personal relationship with Jesus. Yes, it's personal, because we have to accept him into our heart. He says, I stand at the door and knock. But it's never a private relationship,
right?
In terms of when you get married in the church, it's a public declaration. People are there. The church is there. People are there to witness it. I mean, the whole idea of just keeping it to yourself, that's the opposite of the word gospel. If you think of the two letters, right, the first letters in the word gospel, G-O, go. You're supposed to go into all the world preaching the good news. And so we don't keep it to ourselves. And I think sometimes, you know, some people have a look differently at that, right? They want to just, I'm fine now. I'm just going to keep it to myself and work on my own issues.
Well, and again, this is why it's so important for us to talk to the pastors that come to us, because so often they're thinking about how's it going to affect the people who have looked up to me, you know, if I convert, and forget that what you're doing is you're leaving a legacy within your own family mm-hmm. down through generations And who knows how that's going to play out after you're dead, right? It's an incredible thing to think about what it's like. I mean, the gift that your grandparents, your great-great-great-grandparents gave to your family of bringing them up in the faith. These are names you couldn't, you know, name off the top of your head. And yet you wouldn't be who you are without their witness. This generational impact of your fidelity to the faith. Even if you can't see how it's going to play out now, even if you're like St. Monica, whose feast is later this week, and you think your kid has gone off the rails and will never come back, you still don't know how that story is going to end.
I dedicated, as you know, my Rosie book to my mother, obviously, to thank her for giving me the raising me in the Catholic faith, my parents. You know, because that's something you hear so many kids who are raised now without any faith at all, and their parents may have been maybe nominal Catholics or Protestants, but they did not raise their kids in the faith, and so these young people grow up with nothing. And I think about the fact that how our parents sacrificed to put me and my sisters through Catholic school, Catholic grade school. I mean, it wasn't nearly as expensive in some cases as it is now, but they did it because they wanted us to have those basics. And if you think about it, that's what kept me Catholic, those roots. And then a husband and a mom who were praying for me very strong to come back to the church. But without that, you think about where we'd be, right?
Yeah, indeed. And again, this is one of those beautiful things about being part of a universal church is, you know, sometimes people will come to you, they'll come to me, they'll come to their pastors and say, what's the thing that I can say? What's the book I can give my kid?
Yeah. And what's that one liner that I can give them?
What's the
one
argument that'll shut them up and make them come back to Mass? And there is no one argument.
Right.
There's just the tough living and breathing and cross carrying and praying and crying. And as St. Ambrose told Monica, talk more to God about your son and less to your son about God, right? And maybe it'll refocus your priorities. Putting the burden on yourself of trying to, like, force somebody to come along with it is not going to work. But you never know what that generational impact is going to bear fruit. Often it happens when a grandparent tells their wayward kid to get their grandchild baptized. That grandchild sometimes grows up with a strong faith, even though their mom and dad didn't because their grandparent insisted.
But that's what I love about your show, because it just gives these examples of hope for people every single week, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That was Mother Angelica's point in asking Marcus to do it, is because she got calls and letters all day, every day from people who were saying, I wish my family would come to Mass with me. And her idea was, hey, if we just tell all these stories, we can show you how it's possible. We won't show you the magic bullet to make your family do it, but we'll show you as many examples as possible of how it's happened for other people so you can get some ideas.
Okay, before we let you go, remind us again of the guests this evening, what time, and of course where we can find The Journey Home if they can't watch it live tonight.
Absolutely. So it is Father Michael Nixon, former Hare Krishna, on 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN radio and television, and it'll post the EWTN YouTube channel overnight. We'll have a page for it over at chnetwork.org with some links to all the other Hare Krishna stories, because believe it or not, we have others.
Really?
So come visit us there for sure.
Always great to catch up with you again. Can't wait to see both you and Annie Benanni in person. When are you guys heading down? Tomorrow after the show?
I'll be coming down for the reception with Catholic Answers and Guadalupe Radio tomorrow evening.
Yep.
So
I'll
see you there.
We'll see you there. Don't eat all the shrimp. Save some
for me.
I will not. Okay, my friend. Thank you so much. Our very own Matt Swaim from the Sunrise Morning Show and The Journey Home. Need to check it out both on the radio and on TV. That's tonight, 8 o'clock, and all the information can be found at EWTN.com as well. We'll be right back and give you an update on the Little Sisters of the Poor, and they are still fighting. Good for them. We'll give you an update. So I was trying to think in preparation for the program this morning, and when I realized that it was 14 years of battles with the Little Sisters of the Poor, constantly being challenged for being faithful sisters who were just trying to do what God called them to do. 14 years. I kid you not. Lori Windham is Vice President and Senior Counsel at Beckett, and she's been working with the sisters. So Lori, that number, 14 years, what in the world? So what's the latest with Little Sisters? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on. If you can believe it, the Little Sisters are still in court and back in the news once again. A federal court in Philadelphia has tossed out a rule that protected the Little Sisters and said that they were not required to help provide and facilitate abortifacients and contraceptives as part of their health care plan. This is a path that started with Obamacare 14 years ago. It's been up to the Supreme Court three times just for the Little Sisters and seems to keep going.
So what's at the bottom of this? It sounds like it's mainly political, trying to reach maybe an opponent through the Little Sisters or to get under the opponent's skin. What do you think?
I think that's exactly what's happening. I think you have some very ambitious governors and attorneys general who've decided that they need to sue the Trump administration no matter what. And if that means going after the Little Sisters of the Poor, so be it. This is a rule that was put in place during the first Trump administration back in 2017 that was supposed to end this conflict and say, hey, guess what? Religious objectors like the Little Sisters, you're protected. We're not going to fine you millions of dollars for following your faith. And when that happened, you had a number of states, including Pennsylvania, New Jersey, California, who sued the Trump administration, lost at the Supreme Court, but never finished out those lawsuits, sat on them for 4 years during the Biden administration like nothing was wrong. And as soon as President Trump is elected again, suddenly these lawsuits spring back to life.
So what happens with all the fines? Are they actually paying them, or can they put them on hold while these different cases are adjudicated? How does that work?
They have been protected, and the fines have been put on hold first by the Supreme Court way back in 2013. They actually were protected on New Year's Eve before the fines began on New Year's Day at midnight. And they have been protected ever since by other court orders. But what's happening with these lawsuits now is the states have asked to throw out the legal rules that protect the Little Sisters, and the Little Sisters are protected while these cases go on, but we want a final resolution that will say, yes, the government can do the right thing. The government can protect the Little Sisters. In fact, they must do the right thing and protect the Little Sisters so that these challenges are done once and for all.
Is it going to be done once and for all? I mean, what is it going to take since they've already been to the Supreme Court? That's where I'm a little bit confused about this in terms of how far this can. How could this have gone on now for 14 years?
That's a great question. You know, they went up to the Supreme Court the first time and got a temporary protection. They went back in 2016. In 2016, the Supreme Court said to the parties, hey, you guys can work this out. Let's figure this out. That was with the Obama administration. The Obama administration decided they didn't want to figure this out. They just punted it and left it. The Trump administration then came in and did the right thing, passed the rule, protected the Little Sisters. We thought, great, this can be the end of this. And instead, we have these state governors and attorneys general who decide that what they really need to spend their time doing instead of running their states is suing the Trump administration and endangering the protection that was given to the Little Sisters of the Poor. So that case went up to the Supreme Court back in 2020. The Little Sisters were protected once again, but the Supreme Court did not resolve the entire case. There were still a few fairly marginal claims that the parties had left, and so they decided to bring the rest of those claims in 2025, 5 years later, and that is what we are dealing with now. We are hopeful that this case can get a final resolution. What we really want ultimately is a decision where the Supreme Court will say, yes, you must, under the Constitution, protect the Little Sisters and end all of this bureaucratic wrangling.
How did they go after Little Sisters? I know how the original case came about, but they just seem so stuck on these Little Sisters, like making them the poster child of their agenda.
You know, it's amazing. Of all the people you could pick on, I would never choose the Little Sisters of the Poor. They dedicate their lives to serving the elderly poor, to caring for those in need until natural death, and to honor and protect life in all its forms. And against that witness, you have those who want to continue to try and push the Little Sisters to help facilitate the provision of abortifacients, to help facilitate the provision of contraceptives, and to make an example out of them. I guess that's the best way I can say it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they will not rest until they have stamped out those voices and those witnesses for life.
Talking with Lori Wyndham, VP and Senior Counsel at Beckett, working with the Little Sisters of the Poor in their latest battle for religious liberty, and she's been with them for some time, as you heard, of the history of what's going on in the courts. Isn't this, don't you think, Lori, a statement against the church as well? Because if they can get the Little Sisters of the Poor to do what they want agenda-wise with birth control, abortion, and all those issues that, that, you know, are gods to them on the left, that makes it easier to go after other Catholic institutions and organizations.
That's incredibly well said. If the Little Sisters of the Poor are not protected by our Constitution, by our laws, who will be? Who will be left? And I think really this does come down to there's a particular set of beliefs that some people believe are wrong and should not be allowed to exist in modern society. And so they're going to continue to use the legal tools they have to try and penalize and punish those who would live out a true and faithful witness to life. And I continue to be surprised it hasn't gone away, but I guess on a deeper spiritual level, we should never be surprised that it hasn't gone away.
Right. So how are the Little Sisters themselves, what kind of impact is this having? Because this does wear you down. I mean, we're talking about 14 years here. And even though they have a great lawyer such as yourself who are out there defending them, what impact do you think this has had on them, Lori, so far?
You know, the sisters are really tired. They would like this to end. They've done incredible service caring for the elderly poor, especially through the dark days of COVID and the impact that that had on nursing homes and nursing facilities like theirs. It's been a long road. They're ready to be done with it and not have to be thinking about lawsuits anymore. At the same time, I am always so encouraged and so moved when I speak to them because they have unshakable faith. They look back at the history of religious persecution and what their order has been through. They see that the Lord has always provided for them, has always protected them. And so they continue with confidence that they will always have that provision and that protection. And I'm so grateful and so encouraged every time I see that.
Yeah, they're really something. I mean, the strength that they have, 14 years. I mean, you know, it's so emotionally, it's an upheaval when you hear it. It's very jarring because it can be scary thinking about a lawsuit and going to court and all of that kind of thing. Granted, you have great lawyers like yourself, but at the same time, it can be very worrisome and it'd be a heavy weight.
It really can be. And it's, you know, I think it's so sad that for all this time, the Little Sister time is being in focus, is being impacted by this series of lawsuits, rather than just allowing them to be done with this, allowing them to have their full focus on their ministry.
Yeah, what a concept, huh? Focus on their ministry. More with Lori Windham. We'll talk in general about religious liberty and the landscape out there right now, in addition to wrapping up our conversation on the latest of Little Sisters of the Poor. They're standing strong. Pray for them. And keep them in your prayers every day because they are out there on the front lines for us, because what happens to them could happen to any of us. We'll be right back. Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection, EWTM production on a Monday morning, August 25th, 2025. Great to be with you. Cannot believe we are moving toward the Labor Day weekend in just a few days. Wow, time flies. Having a great interview with our guest, Lori Windham, is with Beckett Fund, and she is the senior counsel there, vice president and senior counsel, talking about the latest battle with the Little Sisters of the Poor, standing strong, though, in their belief of, oh my goodness, of life from natural conception all the way to death, in terms of that means against abortion and contraception, despite what some of these states and different courts are trying to do to them after 14 years, for goodness sake. So, Lori, why do we need to care? And this is, we were talking about this during the break. Sometimes, and one of the reasons I wanted you on this morning for two segments, not just one, is to help people understand, as I said going into the break a few minutes ago, that this is happening to the Little Sisters of the Poor. It could happen to any one of us. It could happen to any one of our ministries. Even though we do have a Supreme Court that is much more balanced now and an administration that is much more likely to be open to religious beliefs, you still have a lot of places, and this is what's happening with the sisters, as you mentioned previously, where the states are going after these different organizations. But we don't see enough of these stories in the secular media so people can connect the dots of why elections matter and the governors and the different people, the attorney, the AGs, as you said, that they elect. That's super important.
Yes, indeed, Teresa. And I think it's a theme that I see over and over again with our own clients. They're going about their work. They're doing good work in the world. They're worshiping. They're serving. And they don't expect that this is going to land on their doorstep. And then suddenly it does. As you said, what's happening right now is we have a lot of cases from state AGs, from governors who decide to crack down on religious people, on religious beliefs. You know, we have some great decisions from the Supreme Court recently in favor of religious freedom, in favor of life, and yet we see advocates who are intentionally trying to do things in the states and steer things through the state courts and keep them away from the U.S. Supreme Court. We've seen that again and again. And we also see individuals who have been impacted by this, near and dear to my heart for the better part of the last couple of years, have been representing foster families. Mm-hmm. These are faithful couples who were seeking to foster children in need and to adopt them into their homes. And got all the way to the last step. Thinking of Mike and Kitty Burke in Massachusetts. They're faithful Catholics, provide the music for Mass. They were devastated when they dealt with infertility. They decided to open their hearts and their homes to foster and adoptive children who are in need of homes. They got all the way to the very last step, and they were denied a foster license by the state of Massachusetts. The state deemed that they were not suitable to care for any child in the state of Massachusetts and the state welfare system because of their Catholic beliefs around issues like marriage and gender. And they were just precluded from being able to do any of that. Their case is in court, and we're going to be back in court this fall trying to get a final judgment in their favor and protecting them. I wish I could tell you they're alone. They're not. There are similar cases going on right now in Washington State, in Oregon, in Vermont, and in New Jersey, where we've really seen a concerted effort to exclude faithful people from being able to continue to provide help for these children who are in desperate need of it.
Well, it's really sad in all of this, and the bottom line, what about the kids? Don't they care about the kids? Just like with Little Sisters of the Poor, all the great work they do, and yet, as you said a few minutes ago, concentrating instead on taking them to court versus they claim these people who are behind these lawsuits and this endless, cases that are up against Little Sisters. They're supposed to be all about serving the underprivileged and the poor and those in need, and yet they go after this organization, this beautiful order of nuns that does just that. Doesn't make any sense. And if they care about kids, why won't they want to give foster kids as many opportunities as possible?
That's exactly right. That's what we're wondering. You know, you at the same time this is going on, you see these states putting out calls for more foster parents, more right. foster families. They need more help for these kids. And yet, if those foster parents say something that conflicts with the state's deeply held beliefs about issues like gender, about issues like sex, about issues like marriage, well, then they have to be excluded. That set of religious beliefs is not welcome, must be excluded. And, you know, you get to the core of that. What is that? What are they really saying there? I think they're saying that those people who have those beliefs are not fit to be good parents for children. If that doesn't scare you, I don't know what will.
Right. Right. And it is, again, to send a message, just like sending a message to Little Sisters of the Poor. There's only one way to think, even though they claim on the left to be so supportive of choice and freedom. It's just the opposite. It really is just the opposite. So, Lori, before we let you go, we have about a minute left. What can we do to make a difference here and to keep on top of these cases, to be aware?
Well, Teresa, thank you so much for bringing these cases to light, for talking about the things that other portions of the media do not want to talk about. It is so important. I encourage you to follow us at Beckett Fund on X and BeckettFund.org. We're going to be bringing you the latest updates on the Little Sisters cases, on the foster care and adoption cases, also on cases on other issues like crisis pregnancy centers who have been penalized for their faith and have state AGs going after them. You can keep up to date. We're going to be tracking these cases every step of the way.
Great. And, you know, it's so important to make sure that we understand what's going on so we can be aware and we can make a difference. The website, one more time, Lori?
BeckettFund.org.
All right, my dear. Thanks for your great work, and let the Little Sisters know that we are praying for them big time, okay?
The most important thing. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great day. Lori Windham, VP and Senior Counsel at the Beckett Fund, giving us an up-to-date look at the situation with Little Sisters of the Poor and their battle for religious liberty. It's such an important story. Also important to embrace Scripture. That's why we have Gail Buckley on with us every single Monday. Gail Buckley is with Catholic Scripture Study International. And her beautiful verse this week is from Ecclesiastes. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, sister. I'm doing well. I hope you are.
Yes, I am. I'm just a little bit, I've got my Italian up this morning after learning about the continued legal attacks against the Little Sisters of the Poor. 14 years.
I couldn't believe it when I saw that that's still going on. Unbelievable. Yeah. I sure hope we can get out of that. It's horrible.
It is.
Yes, you know, our verse today is from Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 4. And I know it sounds a little strange, but it says, "He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap." Well, you know, what does that mean? Well, in other words, if you wait for perfect conditions, you'll never get started. So, you know, it's easy to put off doing what's right or important because we're waiting for the right moment, right? We think, oh, I'll start praying more, you know, when my life slows down. You know, if a farmer kept checking the clouds, waiting for the perfect weather, he'd never plant. And that's right. What it's talking about in our verse today. You know, the fact is that farmers, yeah, they plant even when the skies are gray because they trust the process. But I think the core message of this verse is about the importance of action and perseverance, despite, you know, uncertain conditions. It's a warning against procrastination and the fear of failure. I remember, Teresa, years ago when I started a new job. I was young and there was this sign hanging in the break room. And I would look at it and I read it and I thought, what the heck does that mean? That doesn't make sense to me. It said, "Good intentions pave the road to hell." And that just seemed strange to me. I mean, yeah, good intentions. I didn't think it through. But, you know, that's what this verse today is basically saying. If we wait for perfect conditions to do something, we'll never do it. Mm-hmm. And for instance, someone might have fallen away from the faith and they stopped going to Mass. And they might start thinking about going back and they say to themselves, well, you know, I'll go Christmas. That'll be a good time to go. And so Christmas comes and they get busy. They're unwrapping their presents and doing other things and they don't get to Mass. So they say to themselves, well, Easter would be a good time to go. I'll go at Easter. And Easter Sunday comes and it's a big storm and it's raining. Well, I don't want to go out in that weather. You know, I'll go next Sunday. And it goes on and on like that. So finally, the person dies and they never get back to Mass. I mean, that's a terrible example, but, you know, that's an extreme example, but that can happen. In fact, a few years ago, I had a close friend who was in the hospital, and it wasn't a major thing, but she was sick and had to go to the hospital. And I hate hospitals. I mean, I hate being a patient. I hate visiting the hospital. I just don't like to go. And so I put off, you know, going to see her. And I was told that she was doing better and that she'd probably be coming out soon. And so I thought, well, I'll wait until she comes home and I'll visit her then. Well, she never came home. She died in the hospital. And to this day, I think about it. I just regret it so much. I think, oh, why didn't I go? It was the last time I saw her.
Wow.
So this is what our verse is talking about. You know, our human tendency, I think, to wait for ideal conditions, which often don't come, you know, leading to inaction and missed opportunities. I'm going through another situation right now, and I think a lot of people could identify with this. I've been putting off, you know, witnessing to my son and his wife who are agnostic. And, you know, I want to talk to them about Jesus, but I keep waiting for the right opportunity because I fear alienating them, you know.
Right.
They might not want to come visit me anymore or whatever. And so, you know, I'm not only procrastinating, but I'm showing the lack of faith. And this is what this verse is really about, the lack of faith. So I'm going to take this verse to heart, and I'm going to act on this. But, you know, I'm sure I'm not alone. I'm sure there are people listening now who have been putting off something because they're waiting for the perfect time or the right mood or the best circumstances. But we need to trust in God's providence. We're called to be good stewards of our time and talents and to sow seeds of kindness and generosity and faith. And even when the immediate truths are not apparent or seem, you know, unfavorable. So I think the outcome is ultimately in God's hands. I know it is. And our part is to act, you know, faithfully.
Right.
I think it was Benjamin Franklin said, don't put off today what you can do. I mean, tomorrow what you can do today.
You can do today. Right. Yeah. Do you think this verse can also mean, and I was wondering about this, I mentioned this to our listeners, we only have about a minute left, but when I read it, I first thought of, in addition to what you said so eloquently, I thought of Could it also mean don't be lazy in terms of just being in La La Land and, you know, okay, it's great to admire the clouds and God's beauty, but at the same time, you need to get serious about your faith, as the Pope mentioned in his Angelus message yesterday based on the gospel.
Exactly. And our pastor, exactly what he talked about yesterday, you know, that don't put it off. You know, you think you're a Christian, but you're not doing the right things. You're not being, you're not doing God's will. You know, I'm a Christian, but I'm not doing things. You don't put off, you know, or wait until the last minute to is saying, well, I'll go to confession after I do all these things I want to do, you know. Yeah, don't be lazy. Don't be slothful. That is a sin. And actually, it could mean that, absolutely. I mean, I love, this is one of the things I love about the Catholic faith. It's not either or. It's just, you know, it could be both things. You know, it can be two things. You know, both and, you know. So I think, you know, this speaks to both things that we're talking about, basically the same thing. You know, it's to trust God and God's providence. Right. And, you know, that I've got a situation with my other son right now, and I put it in God's hands. I've done what I could do. I've prayed. I've done actions and everything I can do. And now I just have to trust God that he's going to take care of it. And whatever happens is his will, and his will is always the best will for us, even if it doesn't seem like it at the time.
That's why I love the saying of St. John the 23rd, where he says, Lord, I'm tired. It's your church. I'm going to bed.
I love that. I love it. I'm going to bed now. It's your church. You take care of it. I love that verse. That's so funny.
Oh, I love that. Just a reminder for us. All right, my dear, you have a great week. Thank you for your insights and for sharing that verse with us. Very powerful. And just a reminder, folks, of that beautiful, beautiful verse that Gail is speaking of, is from the Old Testament and Ecclesiastes. Really, really cool verse. And a reminder, don't be lazy. Okay, so what is that verse again? 11:4 from Ecclesiastes. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. We'll be right back on a Monday. Stay tuned. Thanks so much for tuning in to Catholic Connection. It is a Monday, August 25th, 2025, on the EWTN Radio Network. Coming up in the second hour on EWTN's Radio Extra, we are going to have a great conversation with a dynamic priest, and he's from Pennsylvania. His name is Father Alan Hoffa from Holy Guardian Angels Parish, and also his two youth ministers. Now, this is the idea of one of our listeners, a recent convert to the faith, who keeps in touch with me over the months. Every once in a while sends me a nice email about the shows and, you know, comments about what he sees going on. And he said this is information about his pastor and how his pastor uses the media wisely and how creative he is. And I started looking at the website and checking out the videos, and I said, wow, this is really neat. So we're going to catch up with Father Hoffa and just get his take on why he decided to take to social media and do some fun videos and some other really creative efforts to get people interested and to keep them interested in the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith. We'll also have a 2 cents segment, of course, as we always do in this second hour of the program. But I love seeing how priests are really working hard along with their staff to try and make a difference and be super creative. My pastor, I mean, I was looking at, he sends out a really cool e-blast every Sunday, and it is just so well done. It's jam-packed with all these great links. I mean, he has Jeff Cavins on the air, he has Father Michael Schmitz, he has activities at our parish, and they're really popular, and people open them. He has a very high open rate. I don't know if that's the right technological phrase, but anyway, technology, when used wisely and well, can make a huge difference. And we'll catch up with yet another priest who does that, and that will be in the second hour of the program today. Stay tuned.